I'm Robin Vanderpool, and I'm an assistant professor at the University of Kentucky in the College of Public Health, Department of Health Behavior. And I'm actually today presenting Amy Clowitter, who is one of our MPH graduates. This was her capstone project, and I'm representing the health behavior faculty that supported Amy during this process. She's now located in California, so it was a little harder for her to get out here today. And you have our title there. I have no relationships to disclose, so we'll go ahead and get started. Well, can one of you all time me, just so I don't go over? Okay. So as most everyone in the room knows, HPV infection is the most common sexually transmitted disease in the United States. Of the total 110 million STDs that we have in the cases that we have in the United States, as you can see, HPV really carries the burden of that at almost 80 million. Cases. And so that's almost seven, when I did the math, it's about 71% of all STIs are an HPV infection. We know that the high-risk oncogenic strains of HPV infection can cause cancer. In fact, cervical cancer is 70% of all cervical cancer cases are linked to HPV type 16 and 18. And then we even know the low-risk types, such as 6 and 11, are linked to genital warts. But the good news is that we now have two vaccines available to us. Gardasil is the quadrivalent vaccine available through Merck that protects against, again, 6 and 11 for the genital warts, and then 16 and 18 for cervical, vulvar, and vaginal cancers and precancers. And then we also have bivalent vaccine from Cervarex and GlaxoSmithKline that really focuses in on 16 and 18 only. And the good news, you know, for a while we only had approval for, you know, young women and adolescent females to be vaccinated, but particularly Gardasil is available for boys and young men as well. But despite the good news about the HPV vaccine and the fact that if you think about it, we're coming up almost on the decade of having FDA approval for the HPV vaccine, these are our current vaccination rates. So what I call uptake of at least starting dose one of the vaccine series. So for adolescent girls, we're hovering right at 57%, and that's just a small increase from even 2012. So we're really kind of starting to plateau off, I would argue. And then among young adult women, we're right just, you know, a little bit over a third of those women have started the vaccine series, and that's up only from about 29-30% the year before. So we haven't made that much strides in population-based HPV vaccination. We have a lot of research that focuses on perceptions, attitudes, knowledge, and intent for HPV vaccination among parents, because we know they're certainly making decisions about their daughters and sons being vaccinated, the adolescents themselves, and young women. We also have had research about clinical predictors and clinical indicators of HPV vaccination, including healthcare utilization, receipt of other vaccines, results of abnormal pap, other clinical indicators of women and boys getting HPV vaccination. But an area that we haven't noticed as much research about is looking at behavioral predictors of HPV vaccination. And what we're looking at is the practice of complementary health protective behaviors, or you can flip that, right, and look at risky behaviors and how that may or may not predict HPV vaccination. Mills and another group that's used some of the same data we have, you know, for example, looked at condom use. Girls who are more likely to use condoms during their sexual encounters are more likely to get the HPV vaccine. And the theory that we're using to guide our research today is the problem behavior theory. And it implies that risk behaviors cluster in individuals. And you can, again, flip that argument and think that that protective behaviors can also cluster in individuals. And there's plenty of research that shows that if you're engaged potentially in one bad behavior, you may be doing lots of other negative behaviors. But then also related to sexual health and contraception use, that we're interested in today's study, has been correlated with less involvement in problem behavior and more participation in these healthful behaviors. And so hopefully you see where I'm going with this. Our research study that I'm going to share with you all today was to look at the use of contraception during first sexual intercourse as a predictor of HPV vaccination among adolescent females and young women in the United States. And we hypothesized that women who use effective dual contraceptive methods, and I'm going to come back and define that for you all, at first sexual intercourse were more likely to receive the HPV vaccine compared to women who either use a single method or even an ineffective or no method at all. And so what do I mean by effective dual contraceptive use? I won't, for the sake of time, read all of these, but what we were really interested in is our kind of model group of girls are the ones that use a condom plus any of those methods there in the very top box. And how we classified those were what we were calling highly effective pregnancy prevention methods. So fewer than 20 out of 100 women would get pregnant using one of these methods. And then also in combination with a barrier method like a female or male condom, we know that using them together helps prevent unplanned pregnancies and transmission of STDs better than either one of those alone. So we were able to gather this data both around HPV vaccination and contraceptive use at first sexual intercourse using the NSFG data from CDC. It has over 12,000 women in it, a good response rate for females, and when we restricted our sample to really hone in on adolescents and young adult women, we reduced our sample down to 2,600 women. And again, this was analysis of cross-sectional data, which comes with its limitations. We'll talk about that here in a moment. So here are primary measures. Which method did you use the first time you had intercourse? And all of those different contraception choices that I showed in the first box, they were all available for the women to respond to, and then we classified them in one of these areas. And then if you had awareness of HPV, you were then gone on and asked if you had received the HPV shot. And then, of course, the standard covariates that you see around sociodemographics. We also added in parental communication about sex and health insurance as well. And early sexual debut, meaning did they have sex prior to age 15. So quickly, I'll go through the demographics. As you can see, pretty evenly distributed among the two age groups here. Most two-thirds were non-Hispanic white. Almost half of the sample, less than 200% of the poverty level. Education, you know, again, this is a fairly young group, so you can see education fairly balanced out. Most women had waited till after age 15 to have sexual intercourse for the first time. Most of them had received parental sex education, and again, three-fourths had health insurance. So looking at the data, I'm going to first share with this for the overall group and then talk about the different age breakdowns as well. So almost 30% had received the HPV vaccine. And then, when again, using our classification around contraceptive method use, only 10% at first sexual intercourse had used that effective dual method that we talked about. And then when you break it down by age, you can see where the differences start to appear, where for the younger adolescent girls, HPV vaccination rates were higher than the older group, but yet the older group had more use of the dual method contraception. And then again, overall for the whole sample, 36.4% of dual method users received the HPV vaccine. So that's kind of, again, following along with our hypothesis that these girls that are using this highly protective method of contraceptive use at first sexual intercourse are more likely to have the HPV vaccine. And I don't have the data up here on the slide, but for the 15 to 19-year-old girls, that number on the far left, it jumps up to 60%. And I'm going to go through these very quickly, yes, in the sake of time. Again, this is the unadjusted odds. We have the dual method users overall were, this is significant, again, unadjusted, though, 1.6 times more likely to have the HPV vaccine versus the single method users, and the other two were not significant. But, again, going in the right direction. And then using logistic regression and controlling for the covariates that we've talked about, you can see, and I don't have a pointer, I apologize, but the 15 to 19-year-old group, the dual method users, are significantly more likely, almost two times more likely, to be vaccinated than the single method users. And even down here, dual method users versus women never having had sex, the younger group, there's also that trend as well. So again, you know, preliminary support for this problem behavior theory that we've been talking about, that practicing safer sex during first sexual intercourse is associated with another protective health behavior, and that being HPV vaccine. That, again, women using this dual method contraceptive use at first sexual intercourse are more likely to have the vaccine compared to other groups, and especially among the young group, which I think is encouraging. And then alternatively, at the bottom, as you can see, women who are using either a single method or an ineffective method or no method at all are less likely to be vaccinated. And that's really the group probably that we need to be after, going after the most with our interventions and our programs. So again, even though we set out to look at this, I often call her the safety girl, the one who's always doing the right thing, it also helps you to, when you do this research, identify those groups that we're not reaching, that are doing that those risky behaviors are also clustering together. So again, this is it's a very nice data set. We have a large sample able to look at these differences around contraceptive use and HPV vaccination, and to again look at this behavioral clustering. But again, one of the biggest limitations that we have is that we can't tell with this data when the girl got the HPV vaccine. Did they have sex first and then get the vaccine, or did they get the vaccine and then have sex? So which one, you know, which came first? So the temporality is certainly an issue here. And we also don't have data on completion of all three doses. The question just asks, have you started, you know, did you get a vaccine? So we don't know about completion of the full series, which is what the efficacy of the vaccine is based on. And then, you know, I've received feedback from folks about this project that, you know, it's hard to take into consideration parental consent, and that may drive the girls' vaccination behaviors. In fact, parental maternal health behaviors have been used to predict their daughters' health behaviors. And so certainly I think there's room for more research here. But I think this is just a nice opportunity that, one, we need to do a better job just getting girls and women vaccinated for HPV infection, but then also increasing use of the dual method contraception as well. And I think there's an opportunity to really frame some of our public health messaging around complementary behaviors that may work with one another. And also, if you think about this, we may be setting up some of these behaviors and looking at these behaviors that start in adolescence and go forward in time throughout a woman's life. And I think, again, just another opportunity to look at how our behaviors, our health behaviors, cluster either in a good way or a bad way around, and designing interventions that can address that. So with that, I will stop. Thank you.